Blog Talk Radio.
All right, ladies, buckle up. It's showtime.
All I know is we got 5,000 niggers in this county who ain't registered to vote yet. And as far as I'm concerned, they never will. So you can tell your stiff suits up there in Washington, D.C. that they ain't going to change us one bit. Unless it's over my dead body. Or a lot of dead niggers.
All right, welcome back, folks. We are back at Three Sun Radio, and you know today is Thursday, August the 2nd, 2012. Happy birthday to Patricia, or Trisha as she likes to be called. It's her birthday today. That, of course, is Mary's sister. Mary's going to be late with us. She probably won't join us until maybe about the 9 o'clock hour. She's going to be coming in late, but I've got plenty of stuff to talk about nonetheless. An exciting show, a lot of vitriol flying all over the place. And I promised last week that I was going to be doing a monologue about the politics of niggerdom. And I probably am going to do that in 9 o'clock hour, but let's get to the news, because that's the most important thing to get to right now. Now, tomorrow, everyone knows there's going to be this Chick-fil-A kiss-in tomorrow. I don't want to do anything. I want to see how the press covers that versus how they covered the Chick-fil-A Appreciation Day yesterday. I've already been monitoring that and seeing exactly who's been writing stories about it, whether or not it's being covered by the national news media, which you know it hasn't. The nightly news on NBC, CBS Evening News, and ABC News have not covered the Appreciation Day. They refuse to. In fact, there was some audio that Mary and I looked at yesterday where the Atlanta CBS station, was in the parking lot outside of a Chick-fil-A. And a guy was there with a camera, and he was, of course, documenting what was going on at Chick-fil-A because he was excited about it. He sees the news media. He sees CBS Atlanta, the local affiliate there, and he's directing them. He goes, "Hey, you guys looking for parking spots? There's some parking spots over there." The driver of the van rolls down his window and he goes, no, we thought it was a protest. We're not covering this. So he drove away. So the news media, you know, they've drawn a line in the sand. They know what side they're on here. So again, I don't want to talk about that in too much detail today. We talked about the Appreciation Day yesterday. So since there's been no talk that much today about it, as far as sort of like people responding to what went on yesterday, there's nothing really to talk about. But the kiss-in, the gay community's response, that will be some news because, as you know, the media loves covering homosexuals when they believe that they've been wronged. But the American people who believe in the Constitution, the First Amendment, and the right to free speech, not newsworthy. So we'll move on from that. But I just want to give you an update that we will be covering that. I'm going to see if there's a Chick. I know there's a Chick-fil-A near my home, so I will do my best to get to that Chick-fil-A and see if I can get some audio, if not some video. And, you know, if we have to film, you know, fellas kissing each other, fine, whatever, we will put that up for you. So anyway, so let's get to the bare knuckles of this. Yesterday we talked about Reverend Owens. I believe his name is William Owens. But anyway, I said that there was more audio to his anger, or can we call it his anger? Let's just say his...
And I think...
His...
In this arena.
I want to say that he's not very happy with the President of the United States. Is that the best way to put it? He's not. So let me play some audio. I'm going to play you the full audio of what it is that he said, some of the audio that we played yesterday is in this, but this is more of what it is that he had to say, because I want to give you an idea of how angered this man and his group is.
That he has not done a smart thing, and it might cost him the election. He did it because of money, and he thinks that there are more black people, there are more people who are Christians, there are more people that want marriage to be right than there are homosexuals, I assure you, in this country. And I think he's going to learn that lesson. I am ashamed that the first black president chose this road, a disgraceful road. So think about what you're doing by giving the president a pass in this arena, in this fight, by saying it's okay because we're black and you're black and we're going to stand you. Mr. President, I'm not going to stand with you. And there are thousands of others across this country that are not going to stand with you with this foolishness. But they have chosen something to cater to the homosexual community, to cater to Hollywood, to cater to the big money people. They have chosen that course and just ignored the people that put the president where he is. The president is in the White House because of the civil rights movement, and I was a leader in that movement. And I didn't march 1 inch, 1 foot, 1 yard for a man to marry a man and a woman to marry a woman. So the president has forgotten the price that was paid, where people died, where they suffered, where they gave their blood to have equal rights in the United States. And for the homosexual community and for the president to bow to the money, as Judas did with Jesus Christ, is a disgrace, and we are ashamed. If you watch the men who have been caught having sex with little boys, you will note that all of them will say that I was molested as a child. A man molested me in my home. Wherever, they will say they were molested. And for the president to condone this type thing, knowing the full facts, is just irresponsible. And he has totally ignored us. He has not given us the pleasure of even answering our request, which is very discourteous and unprofessional, first of all. Also, the president has ignored the black community because he feels he has us in his pockets. But we're not in his pockets. And because he's black, we refuse to give him a pass.
Well, it's not like the guy hasn't said everything that I've been saying over and over and over and over again. He said everything that is that I've said. So I know I'm not out of pocket when I say this about the President of the United States. To give you the full scope of this, I want to go to a gentleman who I know, whom I've met, whom I've had conversations with. I even enjoyed a meal with. This gentleman is very well known in politics. And there's no other way to put it. Because this man is he's a legend. And for him to say this, I couldn't help but say, you know, some things are just too damn obvious. But when you hear someone of this caliber, and when I say this caliber, I mean in politics, make a statement like this, you can't help but go, wow, wow.
There's no question that 95% or more of black voters are going to vote for the president. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's pride.
So the president is taking it for granted?
Yeah.
Okay, let's check it. You know, I always forget how you just answer a question. It's so unusual. Mayor Koch, it's good seeing you. Continued good health.
Thank you.
Mayor Ed Koch, who just pretty much chalked it up to pride. Sure, 95% of African Americans are going to vote for President Obama. So he's taking it for granted? Yeah. Because he can. What are you niggas going to do? But I got to give it to Reverend Owens. I've got to give it to him for standing up. Now, as everybody has already said, Sal in Boston has already made that evidently clear. Look, we know that this is not going to have a lot. It's not really going to have a lot of push in the African American community. If it's going to, I believe that this group needs to make more noise. Civil unrest, civil disobedience. But really go out there and get African Americans to go out there and demand that the President of the United States at least acknowledge them. Now, I'm sure that the press is never, ever going to cover it. Fox will, but the regular mainstream media is not going to cover it, unless it's significant. To give you a perfect example of that, I'll go right back to Chick-fil-A. Here were thousands and thousands of people across the country scouring to a Chick-fil-A, and the press ignored it. Now, something as significant as that, and it's ignored, and then if this group were to do something that was significant where there were thousands of African Americans telling the President of the United States that they've been ignored and that their values have been ignored, well, then you would know for sure. Look at us. We're holding this rally. We're in Washington. You know, we're at the Lincoln Memorial, wherever it is that you are. You're in the Capitol steps, wherever it is that you are. And you hold a rally there and you say, Mr. President, the African-American vote has been ignored, and that you think you have us in your pocket, and you're ignoring us. Get the press to go down there and pay attention to you. But the press probably will not, but nobody's going to move. Now, that's the reason why I don't believe that this is significant enough. But I'm going to tell you something that a lot of people refuse to admit. There are black people out there who know that this president is a failure. They're well aware that this president is a failure. But they'll never, ever tell anybody. Out of sheer fear of being ostracized. See, Negroes are a different type of people, ideologically. Not like the KKK used to say that, like, you know, they had to have a special dentist and their blood is different. not that kind of strange. In an ideological way, African Americans are very different. Because everything to them is about symbolism. I've talked about this before. And I hate repeating myself, but I want to make sure that people are listening. It is about symbolism. It's about what it is you look like, what things appear to be. If there was ever a time where the phrase perception is 90% truth was absolutely, like, was attributed to a group, it has to be attributed to African Americans. The African American community latches to that ideology, that perception is 90% truth. And today, I can say for the past 20, 30 years, it's been like that. It's the reason why you'll go into a neighborhood and you'll find young African-American men who live in the projects or the poor part of the community spend all of their money on a nice car like a BMW or a Lexus or a Cadillac Escalade, even though they're living at mama's house in the hood, living paycheck to paycheck. Because perception is 90% truth. Because if you look like you have money, it appears that you do. Burt Lancaster said it best. Yes, famed actor Burt Lancaster. He said when he was a kid growing up, and I know I'm gonna get this wrong, but JC, if you can look this up for me, I'm almost certain Burt Lancaster was brought up in Brooklyn. But Burt Lancaster, in an interview, when I was a kid, I remember this, and I'm talking, you know, Edward in Connecticut says I have great recall. Trust me, I recall this very well. He said when he was with his friends growing up, they all walked around in suits. He said every time they walked around through their neighborhood, they looked like the guys who had the most money in the neighborhood. They were kids. And they all walked around in suits and shiny shoes. He said they didn't have a nickel between the three of them. But everybody in the neighborhood thought they were the richest and the fanciest guys in the neighborhood because that's the way it was. You had to look like you had money even when you didn't, because that's how you got your respect. Now, can I understand that? Absolutely. It was about respect. You knew you came from a poor background. You didn't want anybody treating you a certain way because of class. That all makes sense to me. And I understand in the African-American community, for them, it's about a classist system. You don't want to look like you're poor even though you're living in a poor neighborhood. You got to look like you're above this neighborhood, like you're doing better than everyone else. JC?
Yeah. Lancaster?
Yeah.
I was born in Manhattan.
He was born in Manhattan?
Yes.
Okay, so I knew it was New York. So
right,
does it say what part of Manhattan?
I'm feeling like
he was brought up in the Lower East Side.
Well, his parents' home was at 209 East 106th Street.
Oh, wow, he was on the Upper East Side.
Yeah, between 2nd and 3rd Avenue.
2nd and 3rd Avenue?
Yep.
That, my friend, is Spanish Harlem.
Today the site is the Benjamin Franklin Plaza.
Yep, I know it well. Well, I used to live on 90th between 2nd and 3rd, so he wasn't far from me. He was 15 blocks up.
Yep.
Okay, so he was in New York. Okay. So I thought it was Brooklyn, but yep, Spanish Harlem makes sense to me. So walking through that neighborhood looking like $1 million when he didn't have a nickel between him and his two friends. So African-Americans, to them, that whole phrase about, you know, perception being 90% truth, that's what they live on. So perception is important to them. For them, it doesn't matter if the country goes to hell in a handbag by reelecting the first black president, which is, in essence, the point I'm trying to make here, is that the African-American community, not as a whole, but a large group, do not care about the direction that the country goes in, because they have no concept of that. If you talk to the average African-American person, they will tell you that what direction this country goes in is not their problem. They don't care. I'm going to be all right, they say. You know, I'm just worried about me and mine, son. You know what I'm saying? That's white people problems. I don't get into that politics stuff. There's always that always excuse. I'm not really into politics. You know, I'm not really political. But then when it does affect them, they keep asking themselves, why is this like this? Why is that like this? Why is this like that? And they don't understand that there is a portion of politics involved. If you can believe this, somebody's calling me up on my phone. I'm doing a live show. Who's this?
This is your mother.
Mom! Mom, I got to call you back. You're out of the hospital?
No, I'm still in the hospital.
Okay, guys, this is my mother. My mother just had knee surgery yesterday. But you are home. I mean, you're at the hospital.
Yesterday I had knee surgery.
Yesterday you had knee surgery, but you're home now. I mean, you're still at the hospital now.
Right.
Okay. All right. This is your cell phone, right?
Yes.
Okay, I promise I will call you right back after the show, Mom.
Okay.
Are you gonna be up?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I love you too. Bye. Look at me putting my mother on blast. Yes, Mom calls. Okay? She's my mom. She had surgery. I had to take that call. That's important. Anyway. So you ask the average African-American person, they don't care about politics or any of those things because they don't think that it affects them. They don't get the correlation. They do not see how this affects their daily lives. But then when problems arise, they always ask the same questions. Why are things this way? Why are things this way? Why are things this way? But they never make the connection. Now, sure enough, you ask them about the President of the United States, they know who he is.
Hey, I don't mean to cut you off, but going back to what you were saying, you know what's odd?
Yes.
Whenever the first thing that goes wrong, the first person they point the blame at is the president or a politician, but they're not political.
Absolutely. I mean,
and they basically go by the narrative whatever's spitting on the news or what they've heard in passing, or it's, you know, basically by someone else's conversation.
Well, here's the interesting thing that I've noticed. The interesting thing that I've noticed within the African-American community that's always baffled the crap out of me is that most of them read the news. They read the newspapers. Daily News, The Post, you know, I mean, they probably don't pick up the Washington Post much in this area, but they probably pick up the local newspapers to find out what's going on. But the thing that interests them the most are the sensational stories. The rapes, the murders, the killings, you know, anything that involves money. Oh, you heard about Madoff. They all know who Bernie Madoff is. You think they know how Bernie Madoff ripped these people off? All they know is that Bernie Madoff ripped people off. They don't know how. They don't know exactly what it is that he did. They just know he ripped people off. Yeah, you know that Bernie Madoff, man. Look how that man ripped all them people off. How did he do it? You know what I'm saying? Just took people money. Well, it's not that simple, stupid. And it isn't. It isn't that simple. But to them, the more simple it is, the more they react to it. And in a roundabout way, I think that's what I'm saying. Is that African-American voters are the simplest in the country. Simplest. The most simple-minded people in the country. Sad, but and I don't trust either one of them, old or young. I don't trust them at a polling, because we know for a fact the bottom line, everything it is that they do is going to be about voting on perception. Obama's black, let me vote for him. They don't care. They don't care what his policies are. They don't care what it is that he does. All they care about is that they support him because he's black, because perception is 90% truth. And as long as you have the perception that you voted for a black president, you get to stay amongst the people in the hood. You will not be criticized. You will not be ostracized. You will not be held accountable for making the country even worse, as long as you vote for the black guy. Now, you think any one of them know their history? Absolutely not. They know none of that. They don't care about any of that. They just do what it is that they do. But Reverend Owens, who is telling people that we're not going to stand with you, you think because you're black and we're black, we're going to stand for you? You're wrong. Now, there hasn't been any reaction because he's gotten no play. But I implore guys like Reverend Owens to keep tugging along. Keep pushing. Keep pushing the envelope. Get more outrageous if you have to. Let this president know that you're not going to fall for a banana in a tailpipe. Let the president know that you're not going to fall for this garbage. And this issue may be about homosexuality. Look, I've finally found African-Americans who found something they disagree with the president about. They've made no argument about his other policies, but this one has obviously struck a chord. I'm stunned. But look, if you want to make a point, make a point. Make any point you have to. I'm with you if you want to get this guy out of here. But think about this before I go to break. Just think about this. When the President of the United States let unemployment in the black community go up to a astronomical 14.4%, nothing, no outrage, no screaming, no hollering from the black community. As more and more black teenagers and black people are shot and killed in Chicago, little boys, little girls, as young as six, shot outside their homes just playing by stray bullets, no outrage. Latinos getting amnesty while African Americans are asked to have his back. No outrage. The president says that he supports gay marriage. And there's outrage. Here's the most interesting thing. And this is why I know it's not going to get any play. Because if I were the average reporter, I would say this to Reverend Owens. Reverend, if you ask the average black person, they'll tell you that they don't get married. That's a white thing. They don't believe in marriage. And with 70% of your community, 70% of your community, I believe the number is at 75.4 or 74.5% of the community, the African-American community, is a single-parent household. You look a little dim arguing about traditional marriage. That's what I would say. But the bottom line is that they're not even going to have the conversation with him. Because they're never ever going to give him the time of day. And this will probably be ignored. It's too bad. But you know what? You are the ones who deserve the government that you elect.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
4 years ago, we made history. Now it's time to move forward and finish what we started together. We have to show the president we have his back.
We can't afford to spend the next 4 years going backwards. I'm running to make sure that by the end of the decade, more of our citizens hold a college degree than any other nation on earth. I refuse to pay for another millionaire's tax cut by kicking children off of Head Start programs, or asking students to pay more for college, or eliminating health insurance for millions of poor and elderly and disabled Americans on Medicaid.
Have the president's back and register to vote. Go to gottavote.org to register now. That's gottavote.org.
You know we've got your back.
Paid for by Obama for America.
Last time on Reese on the Radio.
Have you missed Reese on the Radio recently? Well, don't worry. You can always go to the archives of Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. Anybody heard from LaToya on this one? Isn't she eerily absent?
And she's a big mouth in the family.
She is the big mouth. She's dropping loose change on the family. She's not into dimes. She likes quarters, half dollars. But that I find extremely odd that she's not around. She's got to get her act together. Get in here. I mean, I can't believe I'm actually saying this. LaToya, please come out and get this family in order. You're the only one left to do it. In all of this mayhem, you're the only person that seems normal here. And you're an extreme whack job. You're an extreme whack job. But through all of this, you're the only normal person throughout this whole thing, with the exception of the kids. Maybe not Blanket so much. But all of them, you look like the normal one. It's Reese on the Radio weeknights right here on blogtalkradio.com. If I don't recognize your name, you're Rod Nobody. Look, I don't make this much beef about my broad getting into the house to cook me a meatloaf. But they're really excited about this guy going from one souffle to a big zucchini. I don't know what it is, but she can't stop yammering about this.
Was it Michael Simon?
That's him. That's the guy. That's the guy, Michael Simon. Never forget it. Okay, I'll always forget his name because he's a nobody. But anyway, Michael Simon, the bald-headed guy, right? That's him.
Right, right.
Okay, so yeah, he wears a lot of plaid.
Yeah, that's
him. So he's dressed like the chef. Whatever.
He's an Iron Chef.
Yeah. Is he an Iron Chef?
Yeah, he is.
Is that significant?
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Is it a big deal in the foodie world?
Yeah, it is.
Really?
Yeah, it is. Pretty big.
Seriously?
Yeah, it is.
They can lick my balsamic vinegar. It's Reese on the Radio weeknights right here on blogtalkradio.com.
We will not take a dime from Washington lobbyists or special interest facts. They will not fund my party. They will not run our White House. We're going to change how Washington works.
This headline in today's New York Times sure seems at odds with that promise to put Washington on the side of the little guy, not the lobbyist.
A rather long list of names of people who are working on Obama's transition team or who have accepted jobs in his White House.
I'm in this race to tell the lobbyists in Washington that their days of setting the agenda are over. They will not work in my White House.
The administration has hired several lobbyists, the president of a lobbying firm that worked for General Motors and Fannie Mae.
Sally Sussman leads Pfizer's powerful lobbying shop. She's organized events for the president, and she's also donated money for the president and bundled for him.
Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner appointed former top lobbyist for Goldman Sachs as his chief of staff, appointed to the number two position at the Defense Department, a former top lobbyist.
Hundreds of meetings between Obama administration officials and lobbyists, and no official record of who.
The number of fundraisers for the president have also benefited hugely from the energy loan program.
Isn't the president opening himself up to just a charge of hypocrisy on this?
Just a litany of people who have raised so much money who are clearly lobbyists.
President Obama hasn't even made a token effort to keep his campaign promises of more openness and transparency. It was all just another lie that was told in order to get elected.
Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the five states where Obama is attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi, how
you doing? I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com. I don't know why I'm going to report this story, but I have to. Now, folks, I have to be honest with you. Whether or not this is true, I do not know. But I've seen some amazing things happen during elections. This one, I will have to admit, by far, is I've seen some of the most zaniest stuff ever. And this story comes from the Daily Caller. And they're friends to the room. They are friends. This is a story by someone named Gage Smith. And I'm surprised I'm just seeing this story now because it was reported at about 9:30 this morning. So pay close attention. I will try my best to read this to you. A Tennessee state representative helped create internet pandemonium today when he forwarded an email claiming the Obama administration was going to stage an assassination attempt in order to delay the 2012 presidential election. This is according to the Tennessean. It's the newspaper there. Kelly Kiesling, or Kiesling, a Republican state congressman from Byrdstown, Tennessee, forwarded the email to his constituents, even though it had not been confirmed to be true. The email stated that President Barack Obama and members of his administration were going to create a fake assassination attempt that would be blamed on white supremacists and subsequently used to enrage black and Hispanic communities, driving them to rioting all across the nation, according to theory penned by right-wing blogger Joe Angione. The rumor appears to have originated with the Canadian Free Press. Angione states in his blog that the Free Press reporter Doug Hagman was in contact with an anonymous source from the Department of Homeland Security. Hagman, he said, wrote that his informant works in the upper echelon of the Department of Homeland Security, which he described as effectively under control of Barack Hussein Obama. One of the recipients of Kiesling's email passed it along to the Huffington Post, who then contacted Frankie Anderson, Kiesling's assistant. The state congressman admitted to sending the email and said in a statement that he should not have done so. Earlier this week, I forwarded an email from my legislative office that should not have been sent out. He says in quotes, "The message was inappropriate for distribution. I regret the error and pledge to be more cautious regarding the information distributed from my office in the future." Now, the only person that I can share this, well, I would ever share something like this is our good friend Mike in Florida. Because he, like I am, he's probably more so than I am, become very engaged in conspiracy theories. I'm not one to believe them, but I love them. To me, they are very much like car accidents to most people. You can't help but rubberneck. But JC, isn't that an astonishing claim?
And you know, I honestly believe it.
It sounds, but why does it sound so believable to me?
I'm not sure, but it really does. It sounds really believable.
Because, I mean, we kind of get the whole idea that the President of the United States has decided, and this is from, you know, their own war room, that they are no longer going to try to gear their campaigns towards blue-collar or even white-collar whites or middle-class whites. They're not gearing that. They have literally gone on the attack to get Latinos, African Americans, minorities, women. They're not going after males. Now, to rile up a group like this, I mean, I don't know. With Fast and Furious in the mold, with Operation Fast and Furious in the mold at this particular point, this doesn't seem too far-fetched to me. And
well,
with the model...
Honestly,
yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
We were just having a conversation the other day with regards to the president really not campaigning. I mean, right now, it doesn't even feel like a campaign year, an election year, because he's not out campaigning.
Well, who's not? He's out campaigning. He's out campaigning every other day. He's had over 190 campaigns since he announced that he was running for re-election.
But the thing is, he's not making the noise that he made 4 years ago.
Oh, well, that's because, you know, look, that's buyer's remorse and lack of enthusiasm. You know, this isn't 2008, you know, when he was the unknown and he was doing, you know, and he was, you know, at that particular point, you know, he was running against Hillary Clinton. There was all that enthusiasm. We could have the first black president. You know, everyone seems to love him. The press is adoring him. He's getting all of this fawning over by. So that's different. We know the guy 4 years later. So that enthusiasm, you know, that sort of washes over after a while. He's no longer new. He's lost the new car smell, so to speak. So
right, right. And nobody's even really excited that he's having these dinners with these celebrities. And he started, like, that's not really getting any press. It's like that, like the press has turned its back on him. Even liberal media seems like they're pretty much ignoring him these days.
Yeah, they're very exactly. But you know what? They're still going to stump for him. But it's lost its momentum. Absolutely.
It seems like the only time that they really report is when he's being attacked.
Yeah. Exactly. The number is 347-308-8701. Let's talk to Sal in Boston. How are you, sir?
What's going on, Reese? How you doing?
Pretty good. Now,
so,
did you see this story today?
Let me see where I want to start with this. You touched on the conspiracy angle. So, you know, one of the things about these conspiracies is that a lot of the, you know, the lesser ones will be raised and they disappear just as quickly. This is what you just said is so out there. It really would blow me away if that had any credence. But
right.
At the end of the day, these things do happen. The Fukushima incident is a good example of that. I don't know if you're hearing about the conspiracy that our administration knew that there was that things were a lot worse in the early days of that that incident, and that there was an actual plume that came toward the West Coast. That was much worse than they let on, and that's kind of something that's developing now.
Right.
But so take it back a little bit. I just don't think it's necessary. So I don't think it can't be credible. Let me step back. So let me ask you a question. Herman Cain, when
sure.
he was riding high, I actually really liked what I saw coming out of him, and then obviously this whole thing comes up with the affair. He's
right.
out of the game. What? Let's say that didn't happen. Let's say that none of this ever, you know, that the affair never took place or it never came to light.
Mm.
Do white conservatives vote for him in a Romney-Cain showdown, in your opinion?
You know, this is going to sound odd even coming from me, but yes.
And you believe so because Romney's not a true conservative, or why do you believe that?
No. Here's why. Let's say it was a Romney McCain showdown, as you put it, and
no,
you know,
McCain.
I'm sorry. Yeah, Romney Herman Cain. I'm sorry. I'm so caught up in saying McCain. Romney Herman Cain, right? So
yep.
Let's say it's that. Now, this is my theory, and this was my theory. I want to say months ago, before he dropped out. My personal feeling was that Republicans could push. Herman Cain to the forefront, right? Because he's a black conservative. What better scenario would the American people be put in than to say, we can finally prove that this next election has nothing to do with racism. We have a black conservative and a black liberal, one Republican, one Democrat. And the American people are going to have two black men running. And now no one can ever charge Republicans or whites, for that matter, for voting for the Republican because he's white, because we've got a black guy there. In essence, the racism card is completely thrown out of the mix. Republicans could find that as as many people who said that Michael Steele became the head of the RNC because they were trying to kowtow to the idea because they had the first black president. So Republicans wanted, you know, they wanted to save face. So they made a black guy the head of the RNC. That was the whole idea. They got a lot of, you know, beef for that. But in this case, sure, there were going to be people who were going to make the argument, oh, man, they would just promote him because they didn't want to seem racist. But you know what? That'll be over with. If the race were held today and it was Herman Cain versus Barack Obama, you'd have to ask every white person, why did you vote for Herman Cain over Barack Obama? and they would say, I like Herman Cain. You couldn't say it was because he was black, and you can make the charge because you think he's an Uncle Tom. But again,
well, okay.
There'd be no argument
about
race.
I would agree with you because I think for the case of self-interest,
right.
You're right. Right? So for the reasons of self-interest, you're correct. But let me give you a personal story.
Sure.
So we were recently on vacation, and my wife and I, we were on vacation with a couple of mixed marriage.
Okay.
You know, I'm sitting there, and I, you know, people are very friendly, but if you pay attention to human body language, I saw a difference in the way they spoke with him or treated him to the way I was being treated.
Do you think it had more to do with color than it had to do with familiarity?
Well, they didn't know me either. We're on vacation.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So the way people in the area when we'd interact. So my point is, back to the issue, is that I think everything we do as a nation is about race, unfortunately. And I think people like to, you know, say that we've assimilated, we've come together. I think it's more we tolerate each other publicly, but deep down, I do, and it's, I don't think it's a racism thing. I think it's a racial bias issue. And I believe it affects the election. And at the end of the day, I think the election is voted on racial lines.
Do you think?
I really do.
Well, you think that this particular election is going to be, it's really going to come down to race no matter what.
I do. I really do. So,
well,
you're
100% right, because if you ask anyone on either side of this, although there are many people out there who are pointing it out over and over again, look, this is about the issues. I have to keep pointing it out. It's about the issues. If you ask people on the other side, I, you know, I'm sorry, it makes me angry every day, because I ask every African-American I talk to, and it's never about the issues. It's always about the color of his skin. And if somebody hears that you don't support Barack Obama and you're in a company of black people, they look at you like you're weird. And I always say to everyone, I'm just like, whoa. I'm like, I'm supposed to, like, that's a black man. You're supposed to support him. And I'm sitting there going, in what scenario or in what world does that exist? I don't see you kids out there selling drugs to the white man so that blacks don't get hooked. I don't see you out there in gang wars shooting up the white guy on Wall Street. You shoot another black guy. You know, or another black kid, you know, to keep the stuff, you know, to keep your turf, so to speak. So what is this quote unquote, you know, what is this hypocrisy with talking about keeping in line with, you know, the black guy just because he's black, but everything you do on a regular basis is the antithesis of that. And so,
yeah, it's on both sides. Maybe it's not as, obviously the independents, I think, are a little different. They vote a little differently. Obviously, I mean, I think the independents helped Obama get in office, and I think there's a good portion of those people that are white. But
right.
I think at the end of the day, this particular election, and to, you know, to the point that I think the Democrats have driven this to a degree there by making this a class war, making this a race war. I mean, you know, you have a spot that you play. And you got to get your advertising, but you know it's the one we got Joe back. And I'm listening to it, and that's a pander. That's all that is.
Oh, that, and I play I play it just for that reason. It is a pander. I want people to hear that pandering.
It's so obvious. Al Gore when he goes to the South and he starts talking like a Southerner. I mean, it's so obvious, but yet you know what? It'll probably work. And that's the unfortunate thing. That's where we're going. This election. At night, this election takes place, when we start hearing these results come in, we're all going to have some decisions to make as to how we're going to survive. If we continue to vote along racial lines or along lines that have nothing to do with, you know, good for this, then we're in trouble. Over. I think I keep saying it's over, but I got to stop saying that.
Let me ask you this. I want to get your view on this because I understand exactly where you're coming from. Let's say Mitt Romney does win, or even if Obama wins, and you know we have him until 2016. Here's a great question. Do you think after this election there'll never ever be another black man to ever be the president of the United States because of everything that took place within this election and the one before it?
So I don't really see it as – so I see this election as racial. I see it as
okay.
It's an election based on race. I don't see that going forward per se. What I do see is a decline in the way we operate, because if you go into another 4 years – of liberal agenda,
mm-hmm.
then you will erode all the laws that kept this country in check. You know, identifying a person, whether they're legal or illegal, you know, the welfare, the just in general, all these programs that'll just spiral out of control, the
sure.
taxing of businessman. This goes on for another 4 years. There's no return. We're done. We're on the tipping point right now of becoming Greece. And
yeah.
It's not about Obama specifically. It's about the liberal agenda. If it continues for 4 more years, I don't think we survive it. We'll have mass chaos in a couple of years here if that's what happens. That's what I think.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that's exactly what this is. I think that liberalism is going to be hurt for at least 20 years. They are going to have to regroup, get their act together, because, I mean, right now, I almost want to attribute this to the Tea Party. I think the Tea Party today has put everybody in this country on notice. We're not taking this anymore. It's over. The force is something to be reckoned with, and I don't think liberalism today can even deal with it, and I'll tell you why. Because now liberal media, if you look at the CNN's, you know, 20-year lows in the ratings, confidence in local media, ABC, NBC, CBS, is down to less than 27%. It's so bad. That's
real quick. The Chick issue in Boston speaks to exactly what you're talking about. The people are fired up. I was at this event they had in Burlington for Chick-fil-A. The
right.
line was out at the mall, okay? These are the same people that are going to make sure they get into the voting booth to destroy this liberal mindset. I don't think the liberals are as fired up about their candidate. At the end of the day, I think that's what pulls this out.
Well, they can't be fired up about this candidate, because the one thing that they want to be fired up about, and that's what liberals like to be fired up about, is that their plans work, that everything it is that they want to do for this country, look how effective it is. And they don't have that. That's the reason why they're not doing so well. That's the reason why the enthusiasm is gone, because they don't have a leg to stand on. If you look at any one of these pundits on any one of these talk shows, all of these talking heads keep saying the same thing: attack Romney. We have to attack Romney. And when you ask them, let's talk about the president's record, they've got nothing to show for it. They know they're beaten. They know they're defeated. You know, and that's...
I certainly hope you're right, my friend.
Oh, I'm trying so hard to get to 90% in my accuracy. I'm almost there.
Have a great night.
Thank you, man. As always, Sal, thank you very much. Let's go to our good friend. I knew I was waiting for this guy to call, and I'm going to let him have the last 7 minutes till the top of the hour. Mike in Florida. Mike.
Hey.
Come on.
Hey, Reef. Hey, well, you know, I was listening to Sal, and Sal pretty much nailed it when he said that everything, unfortunately, is about race. And he's right. Everything is about race. And I don't think that it's bilateral or trilateral, if you
okay.
count the hegemonics. I think it's – there's a feeling of absolute hatred for traditional white people being fomented into minorities. And you can see it in the crime statistics. I mean, I send you links all the time, right?
Yeah, I read them every day.
Of racial crimes committed against white people by minorities.
Sure.
You don't see the opposite. It doesn't happen. You know, you see – you didn't used to see mobs of 40 black kids going into Walmarts or clothing stores and robbing the place blind. Not until Obama. And I think – I don't know. I think he's fomenting this us against them mentality, and he says things in a veiled way. You know, he said people are going to cling to their God and their guns, and that was a dig at white people.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that's a straight-up dig at Southerners and Midwestern and the Rocky Mountain white people. And Sal talked about a race war. You know, man, I hate to sound paranoid, but I think if we're not in a race war right now that's just undeclared, I think it's come the election, if it's close and Obama loses, I foresee a lot of racial violence in this country.
So you believe November 6th, somewhere around 10, 11 o'clock, maybe even November 7th, you think there's going to be rioting in the streets?
Oh, if it's close, absolutely. I mean, if it's a Reagan-Mondale-level blowout,
I hope so.
Then nobody can say anything. You know, if he loses every state except California, well, then they can't say squat. No.
Because remember, we're talking about an elector. We're talking about a constituency, and I do mean blacks and Latinos, blacks more so than Latinos, who are very fickle and have very, very short memories. They will forget that there was ever a black man elected to be president of the United States. Him losing a second term or a chance at a second term will immediately deem everybody racist. And if you ask them the question, well, how did he get elected in the first place? They will look at you and they will go, oh, those people were just, you know, they didn't like McCain, so they just picked anybody. You know, they'll come up with some excuse. You know,
yeah,
that's
probably right.
They'll come up with some excuse, but they will completely say that it is racism. They'll forget about the fact that he was ever in office, and they will say, oh, it's just because he ain't do good. And I hate to do that, but you know that's what they're going to say, and I'm saying it exactly as they would. He didn't do good, and he didn't do, you know, say because he wasn't white, and he wouldn't do the things that the white man wanted to do. That's why they want. Well, come on, knock it off. But they won't care. They'll riot in the streets. But I'm not concerned. There's only one reason why I'm not concerned, because it doesn't matter where they riot. They'll only burn down their own ish anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was watching a video today on YouTube about when the ish hits the fan, and they were showing footage of riots. And there's a lot of riots we've forgotten about. You know, there was a riot in Cleveland where they went crazy and broke windows in town. And they went to old L.A. riot footage. And they found these two brothers in a car, and the one brother says, I agree with what these guys are doing, but they ought to be going to Rodeo Drive.
Yeah.
And, you know, I almost think that the reason they never try to venture into affluent white neighborhoods is because they know what's going to happen.
They'll get shot.
They'll get shot. Yeah. And if not by the residents and by the police.
Yeah, exactly. I've always said that's the reason why I said it. I said, you know, you guys want to make a point, but you wouldn't even cross where your ass wouldn't end up on Rodeo Drive, because of course they're not going to go up on Rodeo Drive. They're not going to bother those things. And you know, Malcolm X said it best: there can be no revolution without bloodshed, and you niggas are scared to bleed.
And rightly so, because you know, again, watch YouTube and just spend a few minutes watching shooting videos on YouTube.
Right.
There's a lot of people out there that are preparing for something. I don't know what they're preparing for, zombie apocalypse, but these dudes can shoot. Okay? There's women that can shoot. There's little kids that can shoot. And I never see any brothers in the shooting videos.
And you never will. You never will see them in that.
Nobody's come up with sights that mount on the side of a handgun yet.
Well, here's the thing. I will tell you this. The most interesting part about this whole rioting idea, or if there is rioting in the streets, or you know, people are outraged. What I always find interesting is if you look at the Occupy Wall Street movement versus the riots in LA, right? The Occupy Wall Street movement, these guys went into every other regular neighborhood. They went down to downtown businesses. They weren't afraid of those cops. And when the cops fired on them, they fired on them with beanbags and pellets and all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that I find interesting is that when those Latinos were rioting, when somebody got shot, they didn't go outside of their neighborhood. They stayed right in there. And they know the Occupy kids are getting hit with pellet guns and beanbags. but they still won't cross that street because they believe that if they were to go out there, they would be shot and killed. So pretty much all that protesting and rioting that they're going to be doing is moot anyway. So
I just I hate to see it because, you know, we're going to end up having to pay to rebuild those neighborhoods anyway.
Well, this is true, but to be honest with you, I mean, this is going to sound a little vicious, and we'll go to top of the hour. It's going to sound a little vicious, but you know what? Somebody's got to die.
Hey, I can out-vicious you, man. I kind of hope that the illegal Hispanics and the welfare rolls blacks kill each other off and lessen the taxpayer burden.
Well, at least the violent, evil ones. But
right,
I'm sorry.
You got to shoot the breeders, too. That's anybody from about 8 to 65.
Top of the hour. We'll be back.
All right, ladies, buckle up. It's showtime.
The First Amendment is not absolute. No amendment is absolute. Can't scream fire falsely in a crowded theater. We have libel laws. We have anti-pornography laws. All of those are limits on the First Amendment. Well, what could be more important than the wellspring of our democracy and certain limits on First Amendments that, if left unfettered, destroy the equality in our democracy, of course would be allowed by the Constitution. And the new theorists on the Supreme Court who don't believe that, I'm not sure where their motivation comes from, but they're just so wrong. They're just so wrong.
Come after my free speech if you want to there, Chuck Schumer. You come after it if you want to. I dare you. I dare you to come after my free speech. The First Amendment, come after it. I dare you. So sick of you anyway. It's August the 2nd, 2012, right here on Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com. 2 minutes after the hour. Mary is running late, but she's on the phone with us now. How you making out on the roads there, Mary?
I am actually around the corner from home. I just have to stop at the store real quick, and I'll be home. But I do want to say today is my sister's birthday, so happy birthday, Patricia. I will see you shortly.
Yeah, I've already,
I've already given her
a shout out.
Oh, I didn't hear it. Well, I mean,
okay.
I had to give her my own shout out. But,
of course.
And, of course, she came down to surprise my mother for and to spend our birthdays together, so... I haven't seen her yet, but I will see her shortly, and I'll be there in about 5 minutes.
She looks great. She looks happy.
Well, she should be happy. She's seeing her mother and her sister.
And she's
meeting her brother-in-law for the first time.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, time to get into some news. You're going to stick
around. Hey, before you do that, Mary?
Huh?
At the store, can you pick me up some cashews and pork rinds?
Sure.
You can eat
okay.
Sure.
All right,
what?
Listen. Oh, I'm sorry. Mary, what were you saying? I'm sorry.
No, I you said something in reference to what JC said.
Oh, I said he can eat both at the same time?
I wouldn't imagine that would taste very good, but I'm not into pork rinds, but I like cashews.
I can have a pork rind now and then. All right, let me get to some news. This is absolutely insane. I don't know if anybody heard this audio. It happened earlier this afternoon. And the reason why I wanted to talk about it today was because I thought I didn't think in this day and age that it was possible until, of course, what happened to me. But we've talked about this before. It's the nature of it's the severity of the charge. The severity of the charge is very, very important to pay attention to. Is that we live in a world today that all you have to do is just accuse someone of something, and then you spend a certain amount of time defending it. It doesn't matter whether or not it's true or not. Now, we have a listener to the show named Julie, who's in Boston, whom I love. She's a great supporter of the show. Her husband posted something on Facebook today that I thought was brilliantly done. It was just a picture, and it was of Harry Reid with a black eye. And the headline read, "Harry Reid is a pedophile." And the caption on the bottom said, "Now, look, I can't prove it, but let him defend it." And I've never, ever seen this before growing up. As long as I've been in radio, maybe I didn't pay attention to it. Maybe I was naive. Maybe I was just ignorant. But I find this more so to happen with liberals than ever before. And this is a liberal tactic that is beyond gutter. And when I say liberals, please do not mince what I'm saying to you. This is not about politicians. This is about people, individuals, who have liberal ideology. Like my accuser, who I know is a liberal. She supports gay rights. She's anti-war. Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Flat out. Don't ask me how I know this. I'm a former investigative reporter. I know things that you'd be stunned that I knew. I check up on everybody. I record everything. Everything I do is under a microscope, so I keep everything recorded. If I talk to you, it's recorded. If you've had a conversation with me in passing, it's recorded. Yes, I'm that guy. I'm Mel Gibson in conspiracy theory. Everything is recorded. No matter who you are or what you are, everything can be traced. And I've got things on you. I'll find it every day. All I have to do is, yeah, I talked to them 2 weeks ago. Here's our conversation. I know everything. And liberals do this no matter what. This is a tactic of liberals. No matter who it is that you are, this is the type of crap that they do. Just make the most insane charge against someone, and then you spend the rest of your life, if not maybe a couple of months, defending it. Now, I want to give you an example here. I got a phone call a couple of weeks ago. JC, you'll know who this person is. I got a phone call a couple of weeks ago. Person calling me up that I used to know. I still know them, but you know, I used to know. You know what I mean? And so they were having a conversation with me about my time in jail. And so someone came to me and said, that person said to me in our phone conversation, you know, some people called me up, some correction officers called me up and said, you know what I'm saying, you were talking about me to other people, you know, you were down in my name or whatever. Okay. First thing I did was shut that right down. Let's not go there. Their veracity isn't going to be challenged here. Huh? So because they said it, that makes it true. Now you're sitting up here telling me I have to defend something that someone else said I said. That's it. You want to engage in a fight with me or an argument with me because someone you've never met before, you have no knowledge of, says that I said something about you, so now I have to defend it. And my response to that was, I won't play that game with you. I'm sitting up here, spent 2.5 years in jail because someone was able to go into a police station and say that I raped them. And I spent 2.5 years in jail because someone could just walk into a police station. No evidence can walk off the street. Oh, and you can do it too. Mike can do it. Mary can do it. Anybody can do it. JC can do it. You can walk into a police station right now. and take somebody that you don't like or somebody that you just met or somebody you didn't like something they said and just go, that person raped me. And the police say, oh, really? Let's go lock this son of a bitch up. That's all it takes. It's that simple. Now, I can say somebody shot me, but I got to walk in there with a bullet wound, don't I? Right? But something is heinous. Something is a capital crime like that. Somebody can just say, yeah, that's what he did. Go get him. And the cops, they come a-running. Now, I bring all that into this whole thing with Mitt Romney. I know it's a stretch, but you get my point. Harry Reid goes on the Senate floor, folks, just to tell you how high up this goes, goes into the Senate floor and says that, hey, I got a phone call the other day from an insider at Bain Capital that says that Mitt Romney, he hasn't paid his taxes in 10 years. 10 years, Harry Reid, he hasn't paid it in 10 years. And this guy, from a phone call, from just some random guy, goes on the Senate floor and tells everybody this. He gets no traction, then he tells it to the Huffington Post. Yeah, man, the guy called me at Bain and says that, Romney didn't pay taxes in 10 years, man. 10 years, he says. So he gets some more traction, finally gets some traction, he goes back to the Senate floor and says it again. Oh, Mitt Romney's father would be so ashamed. He's got to answer these charges. He's got to respond to this. Somebody who I won't name called me up and said he hasn't paid taxes in 10 years. He's got to prove it now. Because I said that he didn't pay it. This guy said it. I've said it. Now he's got to prove it. Now go out there and get him. Go on, press. Go bother him about it. Go find out whether, go ask him whether or not it's true. Make him show his records. And pardon my language, these pieces of shit, what do? They went a-running. They went running. Harry Reid said an unnamed source, some random guy just called him on the phone and said you haven't paid your taxes in 10 years. Is it true? And now he's forced to spend days and weeks proving that it's not true. And I have to say, Mitt, you got my vote. You have my vote because of how you responded. And I love every bit about what you said. Not giving you hell, Romney. I've given you hell. In Boston, that's all I ever did was rip you apart. I didn't like you because you looked at, you know, you looked like one of those, you know, good-looking jock guys in school, you know, who had all the money and the cutest girl. Well, that is kind of true, isn't it? But I love the way that you responded.
Have any response to Harry Reid? Have you even paid attention to what he's been saying about you the last couple of days? And that you haven't paid taxes in 10 years, and he hasn't. And he said, I know because I talked to this unnamed source.
Well, it's time for Harry to put up or shut up. Harry's going to have to describe who it is he spoke with, because, of course, that's totally and completely wrong. It's untrue, dishonest, and inaccurate. It's wrong. So I'm looking forward to have Harry reveal his sources, and we'll probably find out if the White House. Look, the Obama campaign is going to do everything in its power to try and talk about anything besides the president's record. Home prices, median American incomes, gasoline prices, 23 million people underemployed or unemployed. They don't want to talk about that. Or his promises, cutting the deficit in half, cutting the medical insurance rates that people pay. These are all the things he promised. He can't talk about that, so they try and put this kind of baloney out there, and the people could smell it for what it is, and it's not a pretty smell.
I love that line. People can smell it for what it is, and it ain't a pretty smell. Mike, have you experienced this in your life ever?
Actually, nobody's ever accused me of anything without any proof. But what Harry Reid did is just, I can't believe that somebody who's the, let's see, the Speaker of the House would
Senate Majority Leader.
Senate Majority Leader, even worse, would get in front of a camera and say, yeah, this guy who I can't name told me some stuff that we can't prove, so here, Mitt Romney, prove us wrong. I mean, hell, for that matter, it's like, why doesn't somebody come out and say, yeah, I hear Harry Reid likes to have his dog lick his balls.
And again, if this were ever said about Harry Reid, you know, people would be outraged by it. There are people who are so embarrassed by this tactic. It's, for me, it's just mind-boggling.
And we still haven't seen President Obama's friggin' college transcripts or anything he wrote for the Harvard Law Review. Nothing. Not a thing.
Which is, again, another thing that baffles me. Here's another thing that baffles me about that, is that we talk so – people are talking so much about Mitt Romney's, you know, tax records. But when asked – when anybody ever asked a question about Occidental, asked a question about Harvard – about Harvard, about Columbia. I mean, this guy has literally got lawyers and the school putting his records on lockdown. And if you even so much as bring it up, everyone responds the same way. But that's irrelevant. And I go, why isn't it irrelevant?
Yeah, I might like to know if the guy who's been running the country for the last 4 years is an idiot.
Well,
you know?
You know, remember, here's the part, you know, that I always laugh at. If you want to take a great comparison, Dan Rather on 60 Minutes 2 doing that expose about George W. Bush's military record. And Dan Rather today defends that, defends going into his past, whether or not he actually got a sweetheart deal, you know, through his father. That was all important. About his military record, about whether or not he actually could have served but didn't serve. That was so relevant. But to ask about this man's records, to have them sealed, people who refuse to, what's that story about Khalidi? Have you heard that story?
No.
Okay, so Breitbart has put up a $50,000 reward for anyone who can produce this this videotape, and I want to find it, so I want to get the exact phrasing out of it, because it's a $50,000 prize that Breitbart put up, and they've been known to do this before. They did it during the accusations that Tea Partiers were calling members of the Congressional Black Caucus nigger while they were walking by. With Nancy Pelosi when she had the big gavel in her hand with the health care debate.
Mm-hmm.
But there is – I got to find this. I don't know why I don't have it in front of me, and I should have this stuff in front of me, and of course I don't. But Breitbart has put up $50,000 – oh, here it is. Reward $50,000 for Khalidi tape of Obama at anti-Israel party. Breitbart News hereby announces – a $50,000 reward to whomever can provide the complete video recording of a 2003 farewell party for the radical Palestinian academic and activist Rashid Khalidi, at which the then state Senator Barack Obama spoke and which the Los Angeles Times has refused to release since reporting on the event in 2008. Now, the LA Times has the full tape and refuses to release it.
Yeah, where's your journalistic credibility? I mean, aren't journalists supposed to be about the truth Isn't that what Woodward and Bernstein would have done, or Ed Murrow would have pushed for?
Absolutely. Edward R. Murrow would, of course, exactly. And,
yeah, where the hell is Howard Beale when we need him?
There you go. So I find this astonishing that somebody like, well, Harry Reid is a scumbag anyway. So I don't think that, I don't know whose idea this was for him to do this publicly. But I'm pretty sure he was all but willing.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I think that the left knows they have the dinosaur media in their pocket. But what I think the left doesn't understand, which is really strange because a lot of techies are kind of left-leaning, is that stories get around at the speed of light now in the alternative media.
That's right.
Just with Twitter. I mean, I tweeted something, and I only have 40 Twitter followers. But then a friend of mine who has 1,000 Twitter followers retweets it as soon as I put it up.
Right.
And who knows how many times those 1,000 put it up. So stories can go around the world in a matter of minutes. And it seems like the right, and I hate to say the right because I don't consider myself a right-winger. I consider myself a patriot and libertarian.
Mm-hmm.
But the non-liberals have taken over alternative media.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, the left has no shot. I mean, what's the biggest leftist website? HuffPo? Huffington Post is nothing compared to The Blaze. And you just look at the power of Glenn Beck. Not that I'm a huge Glenn Beck fan, but
right.
Who do you think pushed the whole Chick-fil-A Eat at Chick-fil-A Day?
Oh, that was Glenn Beck.
Yeah,
Glenn Beck, and as well as and it's interesting. Here, do you know what I find interesting? Speaking of Glenn Beck, what I found amazing, he had this that rally at Dallas Stadium this past
spreading love or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Now look, I admit when I heard he was going to be holding this at Dallas Stadium, the first thing that ran through my mind was, wow, man, you do an internet TV show. I said, I hope this guy doesn't get embarrassed. Not that I'm a huge fan, but you know what? He's on the right side of things, so I kind of root for a guy who's conservative. And Glenn Beck is that kind of guy. I don't always agree with him, but I think he's interesting. I think he's funny. That's what I like about him. I think he's very witty. He's entertaining. I don't dislike the guy. I kind of like him more than I could ever dislike him. But when I heard he was doing that on, Glenn Beck TV and all that stuff, and I heard he was going to be doing that in Dallas Stadium, I said, wait, that place holds 100,000 people. And I said, if this guy gets 35,000 people, the left is going to ridicule him. It was 65,000 people there.
Yeah.
And
they went out and did good things for the community.
Right.
I mean, they built houses and donated food to poor people. And where the hell's the left?
To me, only thing that did for me personally was let me know that the alternative media, or the fact that, you know, that kind of information is getting out there. People are listening. People are responding. It is a great time in America today. It is really, right now, it is a watershed moment in our history. And I just can't believe that these people, guys like Harry Reid, the people in the Obama White House, and leftists all around, that they haven't figured it out yet. That a reckoning is coming.
Alex Jones has 3 million listeners a week to his internet radio show.
Really? Is it really that huge?
3 million, dude. That's a 3 share, correct?
Yes,
that's
it is.
That's huge. 3 million people.
He gets more
every day because... If you'll notice, Drudge links to InfoWars a lot.
It's funny that you say that because what makes me laugh is I was doing an AM radio show in Boston, and my best numbers was a 1 share. I think I got a 1.9 once.
Yeah. And this guy is on the internet. And he has some stations across the country, but yeah, 3 million.
Well, you know what?
Link to the biggest website in the country. I mean, how many hits does Drudge get a day?
10 million a month.
Yeah, there you go.
And that's on average. I mean, I look at his numbers. Drudge is, I mean, forget about it. That's my hero. I mean, that is my hero.
Yeah, not bad for a guy who was working in a gift shop 20 years ago.
You know, I'm so sick and tired of people saying that Drudge, well, I guess he kind of did, but I hate that people reference it, that they say he got his fame and his notoriety because he broke the Lewinsky story.
Well, he kind of did, though.
Well, he did. He clearly did. But I believe personally that what he did with that Lewinsky story, that story eventually died down. Why did he stay relevant?
Well, because once he got his viewership, you know, he just kept producing results.
Exactly, and it's amazing.
He's a voice against what he puts up what the mainstream media won't put up.
Before I go to break, I'll tell you a great story about Drudge Report. This made me laugh. Drudge has this way, and I love it because he likes to slap mainstream media right in the face. But one of my favorite Drudge Report headlines, and I remember it better than anything on Drudge Report, is one day a surveillance camera inside of a newsroom was taking a shot of someone's computer. And this is before, like, the flat-screen computers got really popular. So I know this had to be around 2005, 2006. But the screen on Drudge Report was a picture of that newsroom. And the reporters that were in the newsroom, a guy had stepped away from his desk. What was on their screen? Drudge Report.
Oh, Drudge, of course. I'm looking at Alex Jones' news story right now. It says that Alex Jones is on over 70 radio stations across the country, and his internet listenership is something like 300,000 people a day.
That's amazing.
Yeah, right?
That is amazing.
Because it goes to show you that people, a lot of people, are looking for a different viewpoint. And you remember Air America left-wing radio they tried to push?
Never forget it.
Mark Maron and Sarah Silverman and all these people. What happened? Nobody listened to it.
And their money dropped. The money over there dried up fast.
Yeah, nobody wants to listen to, pardon my language, bullshit propaganda. Anti-American, anti-establishment bullshit propaganda. That's why Occupy is not taking off. You know, if Occupy had stuck to their guns and just gone after big banks, who everybody hates, and we know they got sweetheart bailouts and they've screwed the economy, but they didn't. They throw their money in with, you know, dead gangbangers in Anaheim and Trayvon Martin and gun control and gay rights. It's like they're on the wrong side of history on these issues.
It's too bad that they don't know. But, you know, give it a little while. They'll figure it out. After a while.
I don't think so. I think they're stupid. You know, they're privileged white people. Nothing worse than privileged liberal white people.
When we come back, this is a great story. We've already had the Obama registry where he was telling people, don't buy gifts for somebody getting married. When you hear the tweet that Obama put out, you're going to really, really laugh at what he's asking people to do with their extra money. It's just the most laughable thing I've ever heard. We'll be back with Three Stone Radio. Hey, what's up, guys? It's Teresa on the radio, and you'd be stunned at some of the people who call up to spend some time with Teresa on the radio. He is the godfather of entertainment, Mr. Michael Lohan. Mr. Lohan!
We have to stop laughing before we get in. I don't know how to respond to this. Am I in the Twilight Zone?
you are in the Twilight Zone. On the phone with us right now on Rezoner Radio is the connoisseur of the Hollywood biz, the father of the famed actress Lindsay Lohan. Mr. Michael Lohan is on the show on Rezoner Radio. Thank you for joining us today, sir.
No, thanks for having me, Reese. This is going to be a lot of fun. I can tell already.
Oh, man, you have no idea how much fun we are going to have today. It's Reese on the Radio, weeknights, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
On some of your posts.
Mary, Mary, why you bugging?
James, you're on the air.
Yep.
Before you say anything, you are just going to come clean right now, okay? I'd like to know the adult beverage you're enjoying.
The adult beverage? Yeah, I'm drinking beer.
What kind of beer are you drinking, James? Is it a 211?
Oh, yes.
You're drinking a 211?
Yes.
You're drinking 211 Steel Reserve.
Right now.
The reason why it's called Steel Reserve, and it's called 211 for that matter, is that the police code,
I've heard you talk
211,
about
means robbery in progress.
And don't let me tell you what that 211 has stolen from you tonight, my man.
It's Reese on the Radio, weeknights, right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the five states where Obama's attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi,
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said, because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
This is the real state of our union. But you won't hear stories like those at President Obama's address tonight. The unemployed don't get tickets to sit next to the First Lady. Instead tonight, the President will do what he does best. He'll give a nice speech.
The idea of America endures.
A lot of memorable phrases in it.
That our future is hopeful.
But he won't give you the hard numbers.
Our journey goes forward, and the state of our union is strong.
3 years ago, we measured candidate Obama by his hopeful promises and his slogans. Today, President Obama has amassed an actual record of debt, decline, and disappointment. I'd use the State of the Union to lay out an agenda that will get our country back on track and get our fiscal house in order. We need to nominate someone who is an experienced leader, who has the qualities of leadership, the character, the judgment, the seriousness, the sobriety, the capacity demonstrated time and time again as a leader to help guide our party at a critical time and make sure that we hold on to the House, that we capture the Senate, and that we get back the White House and restore to America what is rightfully ours. A great nation, united, free, and prosperous for our kids and for their kids. Thank you so very much.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
President Barack Obama named himself one of the country's four best presidents. Better than George Washington, John F. Kennedy, and even Ronald Reagan. But Mr. President was just being modest. He's in fact America's best president at piling on debt, so good that he has managed to pile on nearly as much debt as all the previous presidents combined. All he needed was just 4 years to outspend 220 years of history. We can't afford 4 more years of America's best president.
Warning, the sound you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it, I love it.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. We're back 35 minutes after the hour on blogtalkradio.com. It's August 2nd, 2012. Okay, so President Obama. Look, I understand that this campaign is desperate for money. They promised they were going to make $1 billion, they were going to have $1 billion for this election. I'm sure they've made a crap load of money. I'm sure
wasn't from the black people.
Well, I'm sure it wasn't, but I'm sure they made a crap load of money. So the tactics in order to get money have been a little bit off the wall for me personally. Now, this whole thing with the, you know, donate $3 and you can come have dinner with Sarah Jessica Parker, or you can meet George Clooney, or you know, Anna Wintour, all that other stuff, the $3 donation thing. Okay, fine.
Maybe we'll invite you to our next Halloween party.
Yeah. Spend Barack's birthday. You can party with Barack Obama on his 50th
birthday. His birthday is coming up.
Is coming up on Saturday. All of these other tactics. Okay, and then the wedding registry. Now, the wedding registry, everyone went nuts over that.
What wedding registry? Wedding registry.
Wedding registry. What that was he was saying, you know, forget about, don't give your friends a gravy bowl or whatever it was. You know, take that money and donate it to the Obama campaign in their honor. You didn't know.
What the hell did he do that?
It was like, I'll show you the Jimmy Kimmel parody that is hilarious.
Are you effing kidding? I want to say the F word. So bad.
You didn't hear about this? This is
huge.
Are
you kidding me?
Yeah, he wanted.
When did he do this?
This was at least a month ago.
Why didn't we talk about
it? Of course we talked about it.
Where was I at? At work?
Probably, but it was brief. It was brief that we talked about it. We had a good laugh about it. And Jimmy Kimmel played a
oh, come on. And you didn't even let me get a good laugh at that?
No, it was hilarious. But wait. It gets better. It gets better. If you thought that was outrageous, apparently. All right, I'll just read the story. This is from Keith Koffler at 11:28 today. President Obama and his campaign made a desperate last-minute push to close the July books on the highest note possible, resorting to a seemingly endless series of gimmicks and pleadings to prod supporters to contribute. The Obama campaign long ago abandoned hope that it could raise $1 billion and probably won't make its downgraded goal of $750 million either. It was outraged by the Romney campaign for the previous 2 months and may well get trounced again in July. Obama staged a desperate race around the country during July to raise money, with the final days of the month including a last-minute dash out to the ritzy Virginia suburbs and then to a special trip on Air Force One to collect $40,000 a head from the 1% at a swank New York City fundraiser. But Obama's personal touch was accompanied by a series of sometimes bizarre tactics to get backers to part with their cash before midnight July 31st. Among the oddest was a demand for booze money dispatched via Twitter. By Barack Obama, deadline, for the price of buying your friend a drink, pitch in $5 before midnight and to help this campaign win. The offer. Other tweets offered a free car magnet and that staple of money-raising tchotchkes, the T-shirt. Pick your favorite state. Pick your favorite color. Nothing downgrading, nothing degrading here. The effort also included an email box-clogging stream of messages from the campaign, some shrieking that Romney is outraising Obama and that he and his wealthy donors threatened to steal the election. One message came from none other than the President of the United States, who wanted $3.
Let me tell you something, B.O. You are not worth my Rolling Rock. You wouldn't be worth a natural light. You wouldn't be worth a 211. You are not worth the ground that you walk on. You crazy if you think I'm going to give you some of my damn beer money. Or if one of my friends is sitting at the bar talking about, check it out, I was going to buy you a drink, but I'm going to donate that money to the Obama campaign. I'd knock their asses right off the stool.
So, yeah, it's become somewhat desperate for people to ask for.
If you're in the bar, sitting in the bar, and you are going to buy your friend a drink, you think somebody's going to stop and say, no, 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 no. Don't buy me a drink. I have a better idea, friend. We're going to conquer the world. We're Pinky in the Brain. And we're going to give our money to Barack Obama. Don't buy me a drink. I don't need another drink, man. I'm already kind of plastered. And I got to drive. So just give the $5 you're going to spend on my rail drink to that Barack Obama guy.
Wait. Anybody here willing to give up their $5?
I really don't think no brothers are going to give up their Colt 45 Fruit Punch Boost money to give to Barack.
And Barack ain't getting nobody's scissor money.
He's just crazy. I mean, what last time he said that the majority of his donations were from individuals for like $5 and $10 and all this, but nobody's got jobs, man. They're not going to turn up, you know, give loose of their welfare or their drug dealing money to give to him this time.
They should have. What they should have done was they should have tweeted him back and been like, "Do you accept SNAP program?"
Yeah.
Can I swipe my EBT?
With it. Can I donate it to your campaign? I can buy my woman or my man a gold bracelet.
You're probably right. I wouldn't be stunned. Now, look, I don't know. I mean, I can pretty much guess that these guys are desperate. But for crying out loud, do you think that the Department of Agriculture would send out a letter with the next, you know, whatever, payment or whatever, just send out
with the next
a
like,
chain
a
letter.
Privacy policy update.
Yeah, yeah. With like a chain letter to the Department of Agriculture to everyone who receives SNAP.
Would you like to donate a dollar to the campaign?
Exactly.
Well, how much taxpayer money would that cost to print up?
Well, it doesn't matter how much it costs to print up, but the bottom line, I mean, we're talking about, I mean, this guy's desperate. We talk about
this
slush.
This is desperation at its best.
Exactly. We're talking about slush fund here. You don't think that the Department of Agriculture would get, by at the behest of the White House, send out a letter to the people who are getting their EBT benefits and tell them that they can donate $5 to the campaign to ensure that they get another 6 months?
Of EBT? Of the,
I mean,
the SNAP,
would that be against the law, though?
Probably would be against the law, yeah, to use the power of the federal government to support one particular candidate.
Okay, but wait a minute. Yeah, it would be against the law. But what does that matter? How many laws has Barack Obama already broken anyway?
Yeah, I mean,
all he has to do is give executive power and can't get anything that he can do. And that wouldn't even be those people. That's power. I would be interested.
Hey, I think that Congress should pass a law that says that presidents only get to ride around in convertibles with the top down from now on. And I think we would change a lot of their behaviors.
Oh, say that again. Who's this?
I think that Congress should pass a law that says presidents are only allowed to ride around in open-top convertibles. And I think we would change their behavior a lot.
Derek the Bounty Hunter's with us, of course.
Oh, Derek.
Yeah, hey, what's going on?
What's up,
dude,
guy?
Would you sacrifice the cost of your Colt 45 boost to donate to Barack's campaign?
Look, man, you know, I'm getting tired of you guys hating on my president, man.
Excuse me, my bad.
I'm tired of you guys hating on our president, okay?
Derek, he's useless as tits on a boar hog, my friend.
Derek, that's your president, right? You got his back, right? Did you donate any of your money? Are you gonna give Barack Obama any of your money? Are you not gonna buy your girl or your big booty date for the night a drink and say, I'm sorry, boo, I'm not gonna get you a drink tonight, because instead I'm gonna give my president or our president that money that I was gonna buy your drink with?
Look, I don't got it. Look, do I look like a super PAC, man? Hell, do I look like two PAC? Come on, man.
Oh, hey, man, I gave money to Ron Paul, dude. I supported my guy.
Yeah.
I gave him $100 back in the beginning of his campaign. You know, Barack's your ride or die, right? So why don't you give Barack some money?
Yeah, I'm really interested in that.
Why is it that the black community is not overwhelmingly supporting the president financially?
Look, you know, I'll donate something. You know, I'll do something.
Yeah.
But that's not answering my question.
We call that putting your money where your mouth is.
There you go.
All right, I'll donate something to him. I ain't scared. Yeah.
How much are you going to donate?
I don't know, maybe $50 or something like that, you know?
Okay. I would say you get more buying lottery tickets.
That's pretty generous. I wouldn't give that biatch a red cent.
look, man, you know, you guys are holding your nose and voting for Mitt Romney. Look. I would respect Romney if he would get rid of Obamacare for Romneycare. Why don't we do that?
Okay, well let's consider.
Let's consider
Romneycare. Let's consider Romneycare. Okay, yeah. So Romneycare is passed in Massachusetts, right? The people in Massachusetts.
Yeah, they have the best healthcare system in the country, dude.
Really? You have to wait 55 days
really?
To a specialist.
Really? Dude, yeah, I'm telling you, man. I have family up there that they're loving their healthcare. Dude, I go to the hospital. It costs me $1,000, man, to get 6 stitches, man, and a tetanus shot. Okay, I think Romneycare is better than that. All right.
Okay. And then this
crap we got going on here in Florida. Seriously, like I said,
it
costs $1,000 for me to go to
really
the emergency room, man.
Why don't we worry about the $16 trillion deficit we have, the national debt that's going to
crash? Scratch the deficit.
The national debt is a cancer upon the very viability of our nation. Do you understand? Nobody talks about it, but we have a nation. If your household was in debt that much, they would take your house. Our nation is on the verge of being
weak. Explain to me why going to the emergency room for $1,000 is better.
Hey, I'm
go
not.
Ahead,
that's
man.
Not a pressing
yeah,
issue
yeah, yeah,
when
yeah,
the
yeah,
ability
yeah,
of our nation is
Derek,
yeah,
hold on, hold on,
hold on.
Derek,
that's a minor issue.
I didn't.
No, it isn't. Because
Derek,
that's
it's a totally minor issue.
No,
that is not important.
Listen, for me, $1,000 is not a minor issue, buddy.
Do you think the country collapsing and turning into Mad Max is not a major issue? Because that's the situation.
Mike, you make a valid point, but hold on one second, guys. Derek, I need you to hear me out. Just pay very, very close attention to what I'm about to ask you, okay? I understand that you're saying that the healthcare system in this country needs to be reworked. No one is denying that. See, what you're saying is that Romneycare works, and so the entire country needs to follow that meme or that idea and then make it on a national level. Every person has argued that Romneycare as a state-run program works, and it should be run by each individual state. It cannot be a national program because it can't work as a national program because now it goes into government bureaucracy on a larger scale. So that's the reason why. No one's disputing that, okay, going for six stitches and a tetanus shot shouldn't be $1,000. I'm not disagreeing with you there. But you're looking at this thing from the wrong angle. We're talking about the policies of the President of the United States, and the only thing that you have to argue with is you're happy with health care. But you're arguing apples to oranges with Romney Care versus Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act, as people should call it. The Affordable Care Act is a national health care program, where Romney Care, as it's called in Massachusetts, is a state-run health care program. So why don't you deal with what it is that Mike's talking about, is the $16 trillion deficit, and this health care program, the Affordable Care Act, is going to throw another $1.3, if not $1.5 trillion onto the national debt.
I don't know about all that. All I know is that, you know, when I'm chasing a guy and, you know, I go ahead and sprain my knee, you know, I sit there and think about the $1,000. Actually, it was $1,016 that it cost me for the six stitches and the tetanus shot. I sat there and thought about that when I sprained my knee when I was chasing somebody, and I was scared to death to go to the hospital. My knee still doesn't feel right the same way. This morning, I still felt pain, and that happened to me 3 years ago, and I was scared to go to the hospital because, like I said, I spent $1,000 for six stitches and a tetanus shot, buddy.
Derek, do you have health insurance?
That is no, I didn't. That is not good, man.
Do you have it now?
That is not good, man. No, I don't, man.
Do you have health insurance now?
No, I don't.
Well, get up.
No, I don't. But this guy,
what's more important to you? What in your budget is more important to you than getting some sort of health insurance?
Dude, man, look, man, I don't got a family, man. I don't got a wife and kids, man. So I don't worry about that crap. And I'm
sitting
over here telling
you. So all you have to do is provide coverage for yourself.
I'm telling you this.
Why don't you let him ask you a question?
Why don't you let me talk?
Let him have a conversation.
So you don't have a wife and kids, right?
Yeah.
Right, but you tell me you got money to go out bar hopping and all this shit. Why don't you spend some of your disposable income on a health insurance plan? There's insurance out there you can get. Answer my question. Do you have anything in your budget you can get rid of to get health insurance?
Yeah,
I probably got to chop some things down. But you know, Mike, I remember there was something I was supposed to get with you about. You know, I remember when you was talking about, I know we're going to another subject here, but I remember when you was talking about that Aurora, Colorado, you sat there and you said when you thought about children in the movie theater, all you could sit there and think about was black people. But all I keep seeing is white people that had their children in the movie theater, man. So when you were thinking about
whatever,
these,
okay, yeah.
When you were thinking about black people in the movie theater, were you thinking about black people who were sitting next to those white people who had their children in the movie theater? Because all I saw on the news was white people with children in that movie theater. All I saw was white people in the movie theater. I wanted to get
okay, they were white. Big effing deal. You're not addressing the fact that you're bitching that the government should give you some health insurance when you have no reason. You can't find money in your budget to get your own damn health insurance.
Wait. Can I say something, please?
Yeah, before I put it.
Okay. It is not expensive as a single. And I'm assuming that you're pretty healthy and good health, Derek. You're not old. I don't think that you smoke cigarettes. I don't know.
He doesn't.
Okay, you know, you have a drink. Who doesn't? You're in good physical condition. So it's not going to cost you a lot of money to go out to Blue Cross Blue Shield, United Healthcare, Aetna, any of these major medical insurance companies, and get your own insurance policy. And because of the fact that you basically work for yourself, because of the job that you do, you can claim that on your taxes and get a tax break. So cut back a little bit if you need to on your social spending and get yourself some health care and stop bitching about having to go to the hospital and spend $1,000 for a tetanus shot and you know, a couple of stitches when you could have paid $25 for a copay. You could have went to, you know, an urgent care center and paid a $25 copay. You didn't have to go to the ER. But people like you.
But you still guys aren't explaining to me how come six stitches and a tetanus shot cost $1,000 and that's good. That's better than.
Derek, Derek, and the people like you that refuse to go out and get their own health care just because their company, they work for themselves or their company doesn't offer them health care, you can afford to go out and get health care on your own. It's not that expensive. You can get a decent plan.
As a single person.
You know, as a single person.
Is it more affordable for
you? It's much more affordable for you as a single person. Be glad you're not married and don't have any kids because you'd be up Schitt's Creek.
What are you looking at the most?
Status quo is good. You Republicans are offering me a better plan. Okay? You're not offering me a better plan.
It's good, but you have an option. You don't have to be uninsured.
Show me your option.
Go buy some health insurance for a couple $100 a month. The money you spend on farting around and drinking and going to movies and bullshit.
It's a couple of $100. $250 a month is usually the highest I've ever seen anybody pay for, especially if they're single. $250 a month, Derek. Are you telling me you could muster that kind of money?
And I pay, and I have health insurance with my job, and I pay more. I pay $272 every 2 weeks for myself and one other person. So you can go out as a single person and get health insurance for cheaper than that on a month basis.
Ron Paul had a solution for it. He said that the problem with health insurance is you're not allowed to have a competitive market, and you can't get health insurance from out of state for some reason. I don't know why. But
well,
if health insurance companies had to compete for your business and you were able to, you know, live in Florida and get a plan out of California, the cost would come down.
That's exactly right. I've always talked about that. That's the one thing that I believe Ron Paul really got. But a lot of other people have said that as well, is that you really, really make these people compete for your business. Don't make it one system with the government. And, Derek, you know this because I know that you know your dad was a savvy businessman and knew that the way that you keep costs down is through competition.
And all the Affordable Health Care Act is forcing you to buy health insurance from existing health insurance companies anyway. It's not a true single payer. And I would almost get behind a true single payer if our country could afford it. But we can't.
Eventually, you're going to have to stop paying for insurance anyway, so you might as well get used to it now. Because Obama ain't giving you no free health insurance. It ain't free. You got a job. You make money. You have earned income. You have to pay for it.
Yeah, that's another
and
thing.
It's going into the pocket of a for-profit health insurance company. So the president is telling you, you have to buy a product from a certain company. That's totally unconstitutional.
Dude, so
the government can't tell you that you have to buy a product from a certain entity. They can't tell you that. That's non-competitive.
We're not saying that the former was better. We're saying that, yes, there should have been health care reform, but not in a form of a mandate. It's different. We should not force. Remember, there are going to be people out there who cannot afford health care who are now going to be charged for it. If not charged for it, they'll be fined for not paying for it, and they could do prison time because it's a violation. The IRS will go after them. Do you know the Affordable Health Care Act caused 15,000 new employees in the IRS? Specifically to make sure that this is going to be paid for. And the people who don't pay, they're going to be hunted down by the IRS, and if they don't pay the fine, they can see prison time. This isn't a good thing, Derek.
Yeah, I know, but hold on a second. Reese, seriously, no bullshit aside. You see my girlfriends, man. They're beautiful, man. I can't afford health insurance, man. Come on, man.
Derek, get an effing grip.
You're the worst, dude. That's
all about priorities, man.
Derek is a 40-year-old man living in a 25-year-old, a 40-year-old man with a 25-year-old mentality. He loves the women. He's never, ever going to spend any of his hard-earned money on health care. He doesn't have his priorities straight.
And you know what? All the women that you're loving on, Derek, all the beautiful women, next time you sprain your damn knee, call one of them hoes and ask them to put you on their health insurance as a
dependent.
As a domestic partner. You ain't got to marry nobody, but call and ask her to put you on her health insurance as a domestic partner.
And if you really want to save money, Doris, how about being a nurse?
Look, y'all know how I do
just
my thing.
Just date older women with money. What's wrong with you?
Dude,
what's that?
You got to be hot,
man.
That might be the route, Derek.
Derek's got too much pride.
You know, she got to be hot, man. You know?
Yeah, okay.
Mike, I don't know what Reese tell you, man. Hell, I've dated beauty queens, man. You know what I'm saying? I'm not a regular cat, man.
You dated drag queens?
nah, come on now. Come on now.
Actually,
I heard about you brothers on the DL.
And when it does, you know, I hope it's not too late.
Derek's never, ever going to grow up. We'll see you tomorrow. Don't forget the kissing at Chick-fil-A. I'm going to see if there's one nearby.
I don't blame you, Derek.
Dude, you're going to look really creepy taking pictures of dudes kissing. I'm just saying.
I know. I can't help it.
Don't wear a trench coat.